Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
T-Files, the Ultimate Lions Podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
It is time for us to talk Lions, and to do it from Detroit Sports Nation. He is on Twitter at Legit Lions Fan. It is Logan Lamorandier. Logan, let's start off here. Obviously, it's a big win, but going into that game, I was talking with a buddy of mine, and I looked at him and I said, the over-under is only 51. If I were in Vegas, I would be pounding the over in this because I didn't have faith in either team to be able to slow down the other one. Obviously, a scoring fest, but a big deal for the Lions to get this win to start things off.
Oh yeah, for sure, especially with our new GM Bob Quinn coming in. He was brought in to bring in the Patriots way. We're trying to rid that same old Lions label that we've had for such a long time. So after Matt Prater missed that extra point, we were up by six with 4 minutes left. All Detroit fans just really felt that this is going to be the same old Lions again. Here we go, we're going to lose by one. But you know, the way that we came downfield and Matt Stafford really took control of that last drive, it was just so good to see, get us started on the right track. We have a tough division this year, so it feels good.
Overall, just real, you brought up Matt Prater with the missed extra point. We saw the same thing happen with the Jets. We saw the same thing happen with Minnesota. I mean, what in the world is wrong with kickers, and how badly are fans ready to jump off the bridge?
I don't know what it is about kickers, because Matt Prater comes back in, he makes that 43-yarder right down the middle. So it's tough to really pinpoint exactly what it is. He was still 4 for 5, and not many kickers have 5 kicks per game they have to make. So you can't blame him totally, but that was only you can't do much about it, really.
Logan, as you look at this offense, we'll talk about some defensive things with the Lions in a moment, but let's start with the offense. And you know, I'd heard people say, I'd said it on my radio show that I wondered, as much as we love Calvin Johnson, if it might not ultimately benefit Matthew Stafford to not have that one number one target and the chance maybe to look around and spread it around the field. And he certainly did that with the way that he targeted everybody. He had a total of 5 receivers, each with at least 5 targets. Is that a benefit for him? As much as everyone loves Calvin Johnson, is he actually benefited now by the fact that he's got to look around the field and maybe spread it around?
I think that's so true. It's very true. And as much as fans didn't want to say it last year, Calvin Johnson was just a shell of himself. He still had a great season, but he wasn't doing the things he used to do. And he could win the jump ball, but if you ever saw him catch it, he was always getting tackled instantly. And we built a whole game plan around him. So if he didn't really take over the game, our whole game plan kind of went down the drain. So it was really nice to see just how much we spread the ball around, and especially all these little short passes we have. It really fits our strength as a team, just getting the ball out quick and letting guys run after the catch. So last year, both Theo Riddick and Golden Tate both led the league. They were number 1 and 2 in broken tackles after the catch, and we're just going to continue to let them do what they do best. Throw in Amir Abdullah, who's similar to Riddick, and bringing in Anquan Boldin, who it's a little different style of the way he gets yards after the catch, with more power and just breaking physically tackles, but we have a lot of guys that can do a lot of damage after the catch. So if you spread the ball around, I think it's going to be a lot better for Stafford, a lot less predictable, and just more balanced attack, because there's no replacing Calvin Johnson. So I really liked what I saw yesterday.
Based off of that, Logan, let's talk about this specifically. Marvin Jones, who's a big name, and people have a lot of expectations out of him. He was targeted 10 times but only caught 4. Any concerns there that there wasn't a strong conversion rate?
A little bit, because he was making those plays in the preseason. I was really high on him. I didn't expect him to do the type of things he was doing in the preseason. He kind of came back down to earth. I think it's only a matter of time, but he's pretty much the only receiver we had that was getting any looks down the field. And honestly, he didn't get a ton of separation on those deep passes we did try with him. He came down with one, but there was a few other ones. One was almost intercepted by Cromartie. Another one, Patrick Robinson made a nice play on it. So there's small concern, but I feel he's good enough where he's going to find it eventually. But I think he looked all right. Just hoping for better down the road.
When you look at the overall performance of Ameer Abdullah, when you see the 5 catches, you see 12 carries, combining for 120 yards, I feel like this was what Lions fans were really sort of expecting more consistently last year. Now they've seen it in week one. How are the expectations on him?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. That hype was so big last year, and then he started having fumbling issues. And once that happened, he was pretty much relegated down to like a little gadget back. But this year, without Joyke Bell, I think you can expect pretty much what you saw yesterday to continue on a full-time basis. And him and Riddick can both make people miss. And they're probably going to be pretty close to a timeshare at running back. Riddick usually will have more bigger part in the pass game, but Abdullah can do his part too in the pass game. So as far as running goes, I think Abdullah should probably see around, you could guess, 60 yards a game and 40 yards receiving. So I think he can continue what he did yesterday.
Is, when you look at the receivers, is Golden Tate a number one and Marvin Jones is a number two? Is this more of a 1A and 1B scenario? Is it just going to be the number one receivers, whoever's got the hot hand or whoever Stafford's looking for? How would you stack the receivers if you were trying to build a depth chart?
I think it's probably 1A, 1B, with Jones being the 1A as of now. Golden Tate will have more catches this year just because we use him so much in the screen game. And he's so good with making people miss and just getting extra yards that he has no business really even taking. But Jones, I feel like, is a little bit more of, he's going to catch the deep in routes and going to, the 9 routes and anything like that where Tate really stays around the line. So they're two very different receivers. In Jim Bob Cooter's offense, so Golden Tate, it's almost just like he's a run game. Get the ball to him quick and let him run. So it's tough to say. If you want to put a label on it, I'd say Marvin Jones is 1A, Golden Tate 1B.
Logan, I mentioned it at the beginning. Obviously, if we'd been in Vegas, we would have wanted to bet the over, that's for sure, because at 51, it sure seemed like these teams were going to explode, and that's because of the defenses not being the strength of either of these teams, Detroit or Indianapolis. Were there any bright spots defensively for you in the game?
There wasn't a lot, but Kerry Hyder, our defensive end, a guy who in week 2 of the preseason most winning have on our final roster, and not until he had 3 sacks in week 4 of the preseason did he kind of get on the radar of everyone, and then he continued that success by coming up with 2 sacks and a good pressure resulting in an incompletion yesterday. So he was about the only one. It was pretty disappointing to see Ziggy Ansah, who a lot of people have huge expectations this year. It just disappeared at times. So there wasn't a ton. We have DeAndre Levy back. That might be another positive. He looked well. He played well, and he had a stupid personal foul penalty. But there's definitely going to be some things they're going to have to shore up along the defense just because they did not look good yesterday. And Andrew Luck's a good quarterback. They could have a top 5 offense this year easily. So we'll see how it plays out, but it was concerning overall on the defensive effort.
Well, certainly, and this could be a team, Logan, that's in a position where they're just going to have to outscore people to try to, you know, expect to hold teams under 20 or even to get lucky at, you know, 17 or 14 doesn't seem to be in the cards for them. That said, they get a home game now to open up the home season. You get it against the Titans, who just lost to Minnesota. And so there's got to be some good feelings right now that Detroit can wind up being 2-0 going into that road game against the Packers.
Oh, for sure. And that's one of the things we have going for us this year is just our strength of schedule. It's one of the weakest, but unfortunately that the Packers have the easiest schedule. So the people we're going up against our division have a pretty similar schedule to us. But that was one thing where I feel like the national media was kind of always overlooking when they were talking about the Lions, because you consistently saw 6 or 7 wins as the predicted total for the Lions. But if you look at their schedule, they have a lot of very winnable games. So yeah, I think 2-0 should be the expectation right now. Tennessee did not look good against Minnesota, but Minnesota has a great defense, and they showed it. They scored a couple touchdowns on defense. I don't know if the Lions will get that lucky. So it could be a real, real tough game. I wouldn't definitely overlook it, but expectations, if you're a Detroit fan, should be 2-0.
Detroit Sports Nation is the site on Twitter at Legit Lions Fan. It's Logan Lamorandier. Logan, really appreciate the time on the podcast this week. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Good to talk Lions with Logan. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. And as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17 to 35, but he had two interceptions. You're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula. You got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. We're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they – indeed go on the road, and it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense, but I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too, okay? Now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas, although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it for a two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, or resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at, what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how's that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nick.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.